You see, I always thought Australia could be a great country, but it had to have a different idea of itself. That is, an efficient, competitive, open, cosmopolitan republic integrating itself with the Asian region.
It is somewhat alarmingly a quarter of a century since Paul Keating, as Prime Minister, was accused of being obsessed with making Australia part of Asia. Since then, we've had white papers and soft diplomacy. We've been told we're marching headlong into the Asian century. But the evidence of us actually recognising the realities and traditions of the region and bringing them to bear on an Australian way of doing things are piecemeal at best. There's a new exhibition at the Museum of Brisbane that's exploring the architectural connection between that city and Asia. I mean, let's face it, in climate terms, large parts of Queensland have more in common with the Asia Pacific than they do with the southern states of Australia. So is that borne out in the buildings that make up Brisbane's identity? Christopher Salters, the co-curator of that exhibition, the exhibition's called Living in the City, New Architecture in Brisbane and the Asia Pacific. And I'm also joined by Brisbane-based architect Michael Rayner from Cox Rayner Architects and Barry Lee, who's director of design at DBI Architects. Good morning to you all. Christopher Salter, why marry the architecture of Brisbane to the architecture of the Asia Pacific? Where does Brisbane sit in terms of its relationship with Asia?
Good morning, Michael. That's a really interesting question, and I think it was actually really interesting to hear Paul Keating's words, a bit of a timely reminder for us here in Brisbane. I think, to echo his sentiments, I think that Brisbane for a really long time did compare itself to Sydney and Melbourne, whereas now I think we're a lot more preoccupied with our place within the Asia Pacific and looking to our neighbours to redefine who we are as a city. And I think that that's actually giving the city a lot more confidence in itself to be a standalone city.
You point towards the way in which it's taken its cues from capital cities in the southern states. Are there notable exceptions in kind of great Brisbane architecture?
Maybe Michael, as one of the state's leading architects, might be better equipped to answer that question.
That is a very swift hand pass, Christopher. I love it. You know, this exhibition's forward-looking, not backward-looking. I will bring you in there, Michael. Yeah. I mean, are there cities in Brisbane, pre-existing cities, that you think are evidence of an awareness of its kind of geographical positioning?
I think more and more the three cities that Chris mentioned, Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane, are developing very different identities. I think for quite a while they were just trying to compete with each other and kind of do the same thing and one-upmanship, but I think we've all got over that now. I think Brisbane is on its way to becoming a genuine subtropical city, and that's its identity, and that subtropical quality is geographically what relates us very much to the Asia Pacific region more than Sydney and Melbourne do. They all those cities, their architects do work in Asia. It's just that we have this advantage of a greater sensitivity to our climate. But I think we're growing too. It's not as if we know what to do and they don't, and we're going to go and tell them. It's really we're developing our ideas, and I like a term called breathable buildings or breathable cities, meaning don't make us an air-conditioned city and work out another way in which we can be indoors and embrace our outside environment. And interestingly enough, that's happening even in the hottest parts of Asia as well. A lot of that's also happening through reciprocal relationships now with Asian architectural firms. Previously, we just went over there and did a job because they wanted something Western, as many of the countries that were developing. That's to a degree happening because there's rising middle classes throughout Asia. But more and more we're starting to work with the practices overseas rather than just going over and doing something.
So, Chris, tell us briefly about the types of buildings that are featured in the exhibition.
So I guess our intent as the museum was really to open up the idea of architecture for everybody. So I guess we're looking at three kind of different themes within the exhibition. Big scale projects that relate to the way that we as a society spend our leisure time. Then we move into small scale, just single domestic dwellings. And then we've got some really great mixed use projects that are really exploring this idea of how architects are helping communities evolve within an urban landscape.
So what insights has putting that exhibition together given you into the different ways in which people are inhabiting these cities?
I think what was interesting for me, and not coming from an architectural background, was as I said, with this idea of really kind of getting inside the head of architects, is to really understand better the choices that architects make when in their design. And I think particularly for me, working kind of in a city museum, which is concerned with kind of, the social fabric of a city, is to see how architects are planning those spaces for an integrated community. That was what was, I guess, the revelation for me in many of the projects. And also to see that really that architects throughout the region are all concerned with the same ideas, that there was no difference from, perhaps an architect here in Brisbane to one in India.
But beyond the architects and the buildings themselves, as you say, that kind of social fabric question, the culture, the way people live in these cities can be quite different. I mean, when we think of Asian cities, we tend to think of high density living, of high rises. Does the exhibition kind of delve into that area?
It does. In many instances, we're letting the projects speak for themselves. I think what will be very interesting for visitors to the exhibition, and particularly people who live in Brisbane, we don't really have a sense of that density, or that's really just starting to evolve now in our city. So I think that there's a bit of myth busting that all Asian cities are these sort of, really dense metropolis. There's some of the cities that we've looked at, they're less developed than Brisbane. So it's interesting to see where they're at in their trajectory of development.
Barry Lee, I'll bring you in here if I can. What's your kind of observation about the way in which what we think of as typically an Asian approach to density in cities might be translated into a city like Brisbane?
Well, I'd concur with what Michael was saying before. I think that one of the more interesting things, not just about Brisbane, but the Southeast Queensland region, is that we are starting to more closely identify with cities and cultures that are more relevant to our climatic zone. I think for far too long we were influenced by what was happening in Melbourne, particularly during the Kennett era, when there was lots of exciting buildings being built down there, which were sometimes really quite extraordinary, but they're not climatically nor culturally relevant to our region. And I think the fact that people like Michael and myself have the opportunity to practice all over Asia in similar climatic zones, it is really quite important. And I've just got back from Singapore a day or so ago, and there is demonstrably very clever things happening in Singapore where buildings, because they can't expand the island any further, they've effectively filled in all the shallow water. They're delivering degrees of innovation that I don't think any of our planning schemes or any of our legislative frameworks.
Like what, Barry?
Well, the integration of landscape throughout buildings, and as Michael was saying, the idea that buildings breathe, and we tend to have policies in this country where we tend to try to prevent bad things happening rather than encouraging positive outcomes. And there seems to be a framework that they're implementing that incentivizes the use of landscape throughout buildings. Particularly in Brisbane, there are inhibitors like the controls over gross floor area, etc., that mean that it's very difficult for people like Michael and myself to convince our clients that doing inefficient buildings and providing social spaces within buildings, providing landscape within buildings, that is actually disinhibited by many of the planning frameworks. Whereas in Singapore now, there's a lot of evidence that treating those kind of social and climatic outcomes as positive things and incentivising them, I once had it described recently to me as being we wanted a planning system where you'd have to be a complete idiot not to innovate. And I think that, you know, for our city, the fact that we do have such an intimate relationship with Asia and very similar climatic zones, it is incredibly helpful. It's far more helpful than looking to the southern states.
Michael, does what Barry says resonate with you and your experience?
Yeah, most certainly it does. And I think, as I said, using that term breathable and not deliberately willing to give them some praise, but Ashal, the Brisbane City Council do have this guide out now called Breathable Cities, I think, or Breathable Buildings. I really like it. It's one of those game-changing things. It looks like just a little document and a kind of meek thing. But if it can sort of permeate, and as Barry said, you know, it's really not just us. We've got to get our clients, and authorities play a big role in encouraging our clients so that we can got the freedom to do things that are out of the box. So otherwise we're just sort of battlers for something. So I think things like that where council really backs an idea and has got hold of it are really important for us to work with our clients. The other thing I was just thinking on that subject, and perhaps what you were saying before, Michael, was I think Sydney and Melbourne have a kind of identity of their own, I guess, you know, to a degree, as Barry said, you know, particularly when the Kennett era became the cultural capital of Australia, Sydney the financial capital, and what was Brisbane. So I think we are still looking for an identity. We know it should be subtropical. We know we should be out there. I think we, you know, people like myself believe that we should be really supporting connections between pedestrian movement, the ferry systems, cycling, and another kind of system, whether it's light rail, but something that's really sort of imageable and makes us feel and look like a subtropical city. But I think the same thing's happening to many Asian cities, so we're kind of on a journey together. Many Asian cities historically have been trying to build an iconic building, one big single museum or gallery or something that amazes everybody and goes, gee, I know where Tianjin is in China or something because I know that thing. But sadly, if, you know, 300 cities are doing an iconic building, none of them are iconic.
Yeah.
So we're all actually starting to think, no, maybe just let's work together with our Asian counterparts and particularly the sister cities to actually go on a journey rather than come up with an immediate conclusion. So that's a really exciting thing for Brisbane, that we're not sort of telling them what to do and they're not telling us what to do. We're actually lacking a bit of identity still. And I think that's the truth of it for Brisbane as well.
But there has been, you know, I mean, there have been a lot of big projects in Brisbane in the last couple of decades. I'm thinking, you know, in the arts and public building space, things like GOMA or the redevelopment of the State Library. Do they reflect a kind of trend towards more adventurousness, or do you think the city continues to kind of languish when it comes to making bold choices?
Yeah, that's a good question. Look, I actually think, you know, it's an era. I think they're absolutely marvellous buildings. I think they were game changers for Brisbane, GOMA at the State Library, if I can say Kurilpa Bridge that we did. They really, really made the other cities notice. Not that I'm wanting to be competitive again, but I knew that Sydney and Melbourne were going, gosh, what's going on in Brisbane when those things were happening. But it was a kind of a window that occurred over, I guess, about an eight-year period. And we really need to keep moving along that journey, and it's perhaps just not been in it there in the last sort of eight or so years. So, you know, yep, they happen, but they're, you know, they're 2005, I think, were those buildings, so it's now 11 years onwards.
It's funny hearing you talk about that identity question and talking about breathability, when the kind of classic Queenslander, which is a mental picture of Brisbane architecture, was designed for breathability. I mean, these are qualities that have permeated Queensland architecture for years, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. I think I'm just trying to think something that occurred to me about that is that the floods were pretty defining for Brisbane as well. They kind of made us rethink who we are in all sorts of ways. I know we often talk about how the community supported Brisbane through that terrible period, and it really changed a lot of things about us. But it also made architects think, gosh, you know, the tsunami's in Asia, we're getting a flood, what stops getting a cyclone? You know, maybe there's a sort of greater urgency in what we share in the kinds of buildings and particularly houses that we built. And I remember, you know, one of the newspapers got me to do in 4 hours a redesign of a Queenslander really quick so that they could put it in the paper. But it did make us start to think again, and it's going to sound sort of fairly trite, that we couldn't think better than coming up with a very contemporary form of the classic Queenslander to deal with floods. But obviously realised while we were doing it, there are all those other advantages that you mentioned, Michael, of climate, and they're really socially engaging houses. So I think there is, you know, a potentially a return, but in a much more innovative way of reinterpreting what the Queenslander is. But out of that, you'll have this sort of wonderful sense of layers of time, a historic Queenslander. It wasn't a one thing either. It evolved, and we're continuing to evolve it now. So I think that's really exciting, if I can say, versus the fact that we've been building thousands and thousands of apartments here over the last few years that are not necessarily particularly sort of climatically appropriate to what we're doing. They tend to be sort of investor-driven apartment houses, and I'd love to see the fact that we're going to be a denser city. You have to be. Queenslanders aren't going to solve that problem. I'd really like to see this idea of, you know, what's a Queenslander wrought into a much bigger building.
Barry, the other question, of course, is transport. I mean, in Australia, so many of our cities have developed around an expectation of the use of the car. Do you think that needs to change in the future?
I think inevitably it will, and Michael raised a good point too, that the flood, I think, made us much more aware of the value of water transport within our, what is quite honestly a fairly wet climate. What interests me particularly at the moment is the kind of disruptive technologies that we're seeing. There's been a lot of discourse lately about infrastructure and building new roads and building new transport systems. But if you have a look at what companies like Tesla, Porsche and Volvo are doing with their self-driving cars, autonomous vehicles will dramatically increase the infrastructure capacity of our cities. If we have intelligent cars that are able to be much more proximate to each other, that can park themselves, I think that the infrastructure that we have will very quickly be able to accommodate the growth that we are experiencing in population, particularly in urban areas.
I don't know about Asia looking, but it's good to hear such a future-looking vision for Brisbane. So thank you all so much for your time this morning. Michael Rayner, Brisbane-based architect with Cox Rayner Architects, Barry Lee, who's Director of Design at DBI Architects, and Christopher Salter, who is co-curator of Living in the City, New Architecture in Brisbane and the Asia Pacific. You can catch that in Brisbane at the Museum of Brisbane until the 22nd of May. You're listening to Blueprint for Living with me, Michael Williams.